Welcome back to the Mental Status Podcast. This is a podcast created by psychology students for psychology students. We're your hosts, Yash.
And I'm Josh.
We aim to demystify the unknowns of studying psychology and share our insights along the way. In this episode, we're really excited to speak about some study hacks that you probably haven't heard of before. And that's helped us go from credits to high distinctions.
Yeah, most of the time.
We're both pretty average students, but we figured out some hacks that helped us get the grades that we needed to get into our Masters of Psychology. Just a disclaimer though, these are not evidence-based tips and just based off our personal experience. Cool. So should we get into the mental status of the week? Josh, do you want to go first?
Yeah, okay. This week, my mental status has been all over the shop, I think. It's been very up and down.
Really?
I think so. I mean, your doubt makes me second guess it, but...
Maybe comparing it to my mental status, I'm like, oh, he's having a great time.
You're like, you suck. Yeah, there's been, like, some great days. I think we both... Thursday was an amazing day.
Yeah.
And then Friday happened.
Some pretty positive, like, client outcomes.
Yeah, and just, like, nice things. I think I made decent money this week, which was nice.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, I haven't got any closer with any assessments. And, some difficult emotional things, perhaps on your end.
And supporting me.
Yeah. Just therapy. Yeah. Always on. Yeah, so I'd say it's been very, very up and down, but it's been an okay week.
Yeah.
What about you? What is your mental status? It's not filling me with confidence.
Yeah, honestly, it's been... Okay, last week I said it was the worst week in Master so far. I spoke too soon. This was definitely the worst week that...
Can I clarify?
Go ahead.
Has it been the worst week or was it Friday was the worst day?
I think, so last week I had a little bit of respite, like it was still, there's a little, like a lot going on, but I think this week, I think you're right, Friday was the worst day, but it was, like yesterday I had a huge breakdown over some things, like still related to like last week, which again, it's probably too fresh for me to get into, but yeah, I had a breakdown, I cried in my car for about half an hour. Josh found me like on my bed, just like crying.
Like 7 hours later, I was just diddling away off my phone.
I know. He was in class and they can't use their phones. But yeah, I left uni early. Like I had a second class, but I just was not in the headspace to actually attend. So went to my room and just cried some more. And, my eyes were like in pain. At the end of yesterday, like, I had to stop, like, thinking about it because it just hurt to cry, which is really sad. And I know I don't sound that sad right now, but, you know, I let it out.
Yeah, yesterday. And then with the up and down week, you went from, like, crying and then just wipe your tears and go, all right, let's go to the football.
Yeah. Yeah, we went and saw the Cowboys.
Yeah, you got this.
The Cowboys and the Dolphins.
Yeah, nice, yes. Nice.
So that was my second... rugby game. Okay, I'm from Victoria. Yeah, we do.
Yeah, NRL.
Yeah, NRL. Rugby league. Yeah. You're right. But they call it footy, so.
Yeah, up here, Queenslanders.
Yeah, but it was actually really nice to just, like, get out of the house and be surrounded by people. And as much as when you feel, like, really depressed and sad and dysthymic, because I truly feel like I am dysthymic. Mm. And I know it's not myself, like, right now. And I know at the end of this 6 months, I will be a different person, like, just looking back on who I was before. Mm. And going to the football was really nice to be surrounded by people, and it's so easy to just, like, you know, want to isolate and, like, wallow in your, like, sadness, which is good, but I think, yeah, speaking to people, being supported by people is amazing, yeah.
And I feel like it's also worth mentioning, this is really off the back of the Tillies, the Matildas. Mm. I feel like that's where this, this new wave of... sports interests and stuff has been for us, and
yeah
you want to talk about that.
I've never really been interested in watching sports, and it's kind of like you need to see yourself represented to kind of be interested in it. Like I didn't, yeah. So I have this like newfound appreciation for sport, which is really nice. But yeah, there's been a lot of highs. Like I went viral on TikTok again.
Yeah.
Like this week.
Commonplace at this point.
Like, yeah, had a whole day of teaching, went viral on TikTok, you know, had the worst, news on Friday.
Made progress in other projects that you're working on.
Yes. Yeah. I did a presentation. I woke up at 3 a.m. to finish my presentation that I started the night before because, yeah, I just was working.
That did not help your Friday.
Yeah, it was just like, it's just been crazy, and that's just Masters, where every single week is just nuts, especially if you're trying to balance other things at the same time. So the next 4 months ahead of me, I was like, okay, this is going to be really hard, but now, like, knowing what's ahead of me, I know it's going to be even harder than I anticipated. So that's really tough to like sit with, but I guess you'll hear about it along the way.
Well, now that we've struck lots of fear of them, maybe we can offer some sort of tips, or I don't know. Do you want to share what this episode is about?
Yeah. So we'll be talking about our study hacks that helped us get into Masters, because you all know it's a very competitive process and you need to get high grades, and you hear a lot of talk about you need to get high distinctions, which isn't necessarily true actually, but you know, that first class honours is definitely something that floats around. So I wanted to ask Josh, what kind of grades did you get in undergrad through to Masters?
Well, I won't go into too much detail because we'll go into it actually in another guest episode coming up pretty soon. But
I think it's the one before this, no?
Oh, okay. Well, we've already gotten into it. Well, speaking candidly, I was quite fortunate that I've done a lot better at university than high school, as I've mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got a lot of...
What were your grades, though? Give us the
deets. I averaged a 6 by the end of undergrad. So, you know, probably mostly 6s and then...
But what did you get, like, first year and second year? When you first started?
First year and second year, I reckon 5s and 6s were probably... So for context, that's 65 through to 85%
mm-hmm.
average. And then I feel like I started to find my feet, which will probably even explain a little bit about how common that is for students to need to find their feet when they're first starting in these programs.
Mm-hmm.
Once I did that, I started to find that I was averaging around the 6 more often, and by honors, I really doubled down and pulled together a few higher grades as well.
That's cool.
Yeah. What about you? What, candidly, what grades did you get?
Well, I actually made a TikTok exposing my academic transcript, so I've got it up here. So in my first year, I literally got all C's. So let's see what exactly I got. So, you know, for a lot of my subjects, it was like 61, 62, 63, 60. I think I got 54 at one point, which are all like credits, and the 54 was like a pass. Yeah, that was like a pass. So literally the first 2 years of my studies, all C's. C's around the board, average, whatever. And then in third year, I applied some of these study tips that we're going to talk about. And I got HD, D, HD, 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 D, HD. D is a distinction, by the way, and HD is high distinction. But yeah, getting from 88 to 77, those kind of marks.
Yeah, and I think for both of our honours year, we ended up with first class honours.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know what your GPA was, but...
GPA didn't really matter for us.
It was over 6.5, I take it, which is over, you know, it's 84.
Yeah, we just went by percentages at Monash. Well,
what sort of percentage do you think you got during honours?
Well, overall for my honours mark, which is including the subjects and the thesis, it averaged out to 89, which is a first class honours. And then on my thesis, I got a 92.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. And I was very lucky as well. I got a first class honours. And we're not saying this to flex.
Yeah.
We're saying this to say that we have gone through that process, and there are things that we learned along the way that helped us.
Mm.
And so rather than just the generic, we thought we'd try to come up with some which perhaps you might not have heard of before. And that genuinely did help us.
Cool. So should we get into it?
Yeah, is it you first or me?
I'll start us off. So how we've done this is come up with 10 tips, 5 each. So we don't actually know each other's tips. So it'll be a surprise for both of us.
Hopefully there's not too much controversy
in this. All right. My first tip is the 1,000 word per week rule. Have you heard of that before, Josh?
I've never heard of that. What is that?
I made it up. So it's essentially if you have a 4,000 word assignment, you need 4 weeks. If you have a 3,000 word assignment, you need 3 weeks. And what this allows you to do is give you the time to step away from your assignment and do something else, work on something else, and then revisit it. Because looking at your assignment with fresh eyes is honestly the best way for you to edit your assignment and see some things that you weren't seeing when you're in that tunnel vision phase of writing your assignment. So what was that quote that you once told me?
I'll probably butcher this, but it's something to the effect of the best writers don't write, they rewrite.
Yeah. So essentially, the real work happens when you're editing. So if you are writing an assignment and you do it in one draft and then you proofread it, just fix up some errors and then submit it, you're doing it wrong. The best way to do it is to write a first draft and then leave a couple of days, revisit it, leave a couple of days, maybe just revisit it another time and then submit.
Yeah, I think this is a really good one, and it was really exemplified for me in my thesis. Like this relates to, you know, when you've been looking at the same words for a week straight, you need some time away from it to find those breakthroughs, I think.
Yeah, definitely the breakthroughs. And that's a huge difference between me in first and second year compared to third and fourth year was right. The time.
You tried to just like run it and gun it at the start?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Well, I think this one probably goes quite hand in hand with mine, actually. There's probably a fair bit of overlap. So study tip number 2, I won't go into a great amount of depth because it is very similar, but done is better than perfect. And as well as that, something is better than nothing, and don't wait for perfect conditions. And what's so good about those back-to-back, that worked out really nicely, is that I think a lot of the time when people do go into it with this, oh, I need to write it perfectly and I need to get it spot on and I need to nail my draft, they end up not writing anything.
I'm actually experiencing that at the moment. I'm working on this project, which I don't know if I can really say anything yet. I'm waiting till they announce it so then I can talk about it too. I don't want to get in trouble. But it is such an important thing for me and I've been avoiding it. And I'm so stressed about it and I just want it to be perfect because there's so much pressure and it means so much to me. But in the same token, I'm just not doing anything because I want that first draft to be perfect and we have to submit it to be reviewed. And I don't want negative feedback because it's something so important to me and I just want it to be good. I want to express what I can, but I've just had to submit what I can and just keep trusting that I'll be able to improve on it later.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the common things we see with that procrastination is, yeah, when you just need it to be perfect, but because you're waiting for it to be perfect, the conditions never feel right.
Yeah.
But in reality, doing something is better than doing nothing. Doing something bad, like you said, something where you can go back over it and go, no, I'm sunken costs here. I'll just delete that because it's not that good and I'll rewrite it. So yeah, I think that's my second tip summed up.
Cool. So my third tip, I didn't know what to name it. So on the sheet of paper in front of us, it just says weird exam revision technique.
I'm so curious by this one.
So do you want to know how I revise for exams?
Hit me.
Josh doesn't know this, but what I do is I don't take notes during class. I never take notes. I never have. I just sit there and listen. And then when it comes to exam time, what I'll do is I'll go to the lecture recordings. I will go slide by slide and I'll mute myself, like I mute the volume so I don't hear what the lecture's saying. And then I'll go to the first slide. I'll see any of the images, the prompts, and I'll try guess what the lecturer is talking about and try remember from that lecture or my common knowledge what's going on. And they might have a diagram, for example, and I might try figure out what's going on. And naturally, I've kind of connected with the content and I come up with questions. So, oh, could it be this or it could be that? Oh, if it is this, I wonder what this means. You know, I come up with these questions and then I play it and it's almost like the answer's given to me. And it helps me link things that I've never thought of before. And I do that. I know it takes a while, but I find that if I just do one lecture once, I'm set with that topic.
Wow. I mean, that actually, it makes a lot of sense to me because I don't know if you've just stumbled on this, but is that not higher order learning processes you're doing there?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, what it sounds like you're doing is you're kind of comparing it to the knowledge that you have and trying to deduce it based on your prior knowledge, which is kind of those higher order learning processes that do consolidate information. So that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, it's actually really fun because I'll come to a slide that's some of our lectures have like a couple of like prompts per slide and like it could go so many different ways, and so I have so many questions, and when they explain it to you, just really resonates with you, and then some of your questions are answered, it really sticks in your brain, and I find that amazing. I worked that out in third year, I think, and my exam revision has never been better.
This is working out really well because my next study tip kind of goes hand in hand with this one as well. My fourth study tip is discover and follow your own unique learning and productivity style. I remember when I was in high school and also the early stages of uni, I was trying to follow the people around me and how they studied, and I'd hear about what they're doing and I'd go, oh man, that is really hard. That does not work for me. And it wasn't until probably, I would say third year, I would pretty confidently say third year that I actually figured out that some of those approaches just did not work for me.
And that's a process I think everyone goes through. And, you know, I did the thing. I bought all those zebra highlighters. I followed all those study talk things, but that did not work for me.
And one that you said didn't work for me either. And I'm really surprised to hear that about note-taking. This is going to stir the pot. I never take notes during class either.
Yeah.
And I think that's a very unpopular opinion.
I think it's a waste of time.
Well, I will say that for some people, they swear by it. So yeah. If it works for you, that's what matters. For me, if I take notes, I end up focusing on the notes rather than the content. And then I look back at my notes at the end of, you know, when I'm revising and go, what is this? I have no idea what's going on. So that doesn't work for me. But I've found that there's techniques that do.
Some people say just jotting down things that you hear. I find even that distracting when I'm even trying to get like simple dot points. It doesn't make sense to me when I look at it later on. So, yeah.
But I really like your idea of trying to basically in class pay attention and soak up the content as much as you can. Laughing.
Yeah, well, I don't engage in class actually that much. Like I listen when I can, but I find it, I like to do other things whilst I'm listening and like drop in and out of listening. But I find my most productive study time and consolidation time is alone. And so I sometimes don't listen in class.
While I'm not going to condone that, I actually do agree that, yeah, finding the study time that works for you. Some people, for example, studying around others help. Some people need complete, you know, silence or whatever it might be. I know for me, if I'm not engaged during the class, if I'm sitting passively, I'm not learning as well as I can be. And I kind of sometimes get that cringe feeling of, oh, like I'm that annoying one that keeps asking or answering questions.
I never answer or ask questions ever in class.
Yeah. And I guess for some people that probably works. I know for me, if I'm not, I can just ADHD brain, I can drift off and be anywhere else. So staying engaged at the very least keeps me present in the content. So yeah, just to summarize that, it's a process, finding what works for you, you know, when to study, if you're a morning person who gets a lot done, or if you're a night owl, how you study. Yeah, that approach.
Trial and error.
I think finding your own learning style is one of the most essential for not suffering your way through uni.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So we'll move on to tip number 5, which is utilizing other sources when you're writing your assignments. So when you have a topic, your first instinct or what you're told to do is go to the literature and read whatever's there and then start writing. I find that really overwhelming. Literature is so dense sometimes, really hard to read, full of jargon. And I just like to get a layperson simple breakdown of what this entire topic is. So I'll look at other sources first. I'll do a generic Google search to understand maybe some blog articles. And then I might listen to a podcast or a TED Talk. I find it really good for these, for assignments particularly, because they're usually experts in the area most of the time. So I listen to something else to help me get a conceptual framework or an idea of what I want to write, and then I'll go to the literature.
So you wrap your head around it first.
Yeah.
And that's what works for you, is just consulting different media and journals and whatever it might be?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that one makes sense.
That's a quick one, but yeah, that's just how I like to do things.
All right, I guess I'm next. Number 6. This is one that I don't know, I find very interesting, but I am calling this one dopamine scheduling. So a lot is discussed about dopamine, and I'm not going to pretend that I know all the ins and outs of the neurobiology of it. So essentially, dopamine is that real stimulation seeking and reward, chasing reward neurotransmitter. But for a lot of people, I think it's an important aspect of how they organize their day. So I am someone who has ADHD, and I know that if I don't organize my day strategically, it means that I can really struggle more with my ADHD symptoms, most likely related to dopamine. At least that's my theory. So what I mean by this is, if you've just woken up and the first thing you do is you go on to, I mean, the worst one, let's be honest, is probably TikTok.
Follow me on Aussie Psych Students.
Worst time for a plug. But Instagram, YouTube Shorts now, I guess.
And yeah. Quick content.
Exactly. What's happening there? You're getting that short, sharp, lots of spikes of dopamine. Very stimulating activity. So what happens then when you try to go and sit down, put your phone away, and do an hour of your assignment? How do you feel like you're going to go, going from that intense amount of stimulation to little to no stimulation? So this can probably take different forms. Obviously, I think staying away from phone stimulation and things like that, but also it can be things as simple as...
I have an analogy.
Well,
so an analogy can be, like, sometimes I eat cookies and hot chocolate together, and if I drink the hot chocolate on its own, it's, like, really sweet and satisfying and enjoyable. That's but then great. When I have the cookies and hot chocolate, I eat the cookie, and it's sweeter than the hot chocolate, and so the hot chocolate tastes like water.
I used to have this, like, protein custard dessert, and it was pretty sweet, but every now and then I would just have, like, a little sweet treat, like a chocolate or something.
Sweet treat.
Before I would have it. And then after it, it would just taste like water.
It just wouldn't be satisfying.
Yeah. And that's kind of how dopamine, I guess, works. If you go from having the sweet treat of being on your phone, or the actual sweet treat of eating a sweet treat.
Yeah, that's technically the dopamine.
That is working. Dopamine in itself. And then you try to sit down and do something less stimulating, that's going to be a harsh transition. So I will just clarify a few things. Yeah, so this does mean avoiding really stimulating things early in the day. That's your phone. That's also things like food, I think, is one. If you're going and having lots of...
Sugar. Is that why people fast? So they don't... Because actually, when I think about it, in honours, I used to actually fast till 10, and I would get up at... I start work at 8, and I would do like a 2-hour block before I ate, and that's... was really helpful for me. But anyways, I don't know if that's,
I don't know if it's the only reason, but I mean, I think it would help because you're not getting that dopamine from food. And if you don't have other external sources of dopamine.
It was lockdown, so I literally had nothing else.
Yeah. So if you go from, oh, I'm doing nothing, I'm really bored. Well, I guess doing an assignment's better than nothing. It's actually going to seem relatively stimulating. And so going from that, it's also about how you structure your day. So look, all of these rules are things that I don't adhere to 100% of the time, but when I'm studying my best, these are things that I do. And one of those is structuring my day to go from the least stimulating activities to the most stimulating.
And that's when people say, do your hardest thing first or your dopamine-depleting things first.
Eat the frog.
And then the least dopamine-depleting thing at the end.
Because, then if I go and, I don't know what it is, if research was the most boring part of my day, I start with that. And compared to doing nothing, it's fine. It's kind of, I can go into a flow state. But then after, have a little break and then do something a little bit more interesting. Maybe it's like revising some content that I find semi-interesting and then go and do something a little bit more interesting. Maybe it's a creative task that I have to do. It's something a little bit more interesting. And each task, compared to the last, seems a little bit more stimulating and it's a little bit easier to find your motivation, I think. Mm. So, that's mine. Dopamine scheduling. Mm. Structure your day smart and you will set yourself up for success.
And so you kind of discovered these things like through your research of how to navigate this studying landscape and becoming a psychologist with ADHD.
I wanted to make sure that I found coping strategies that I could incorporate into my life that works.
And you have some other tips as well. Like we might make an episode delving more into...
Well, yeah, I think that's the plan. We are planning to do an episode on ADHD as a student and as a psychologist.
Mm.
And I've been diagnosed with ADHD and I think that's something which I feel like I'm very interested in and I hope that I can share some insights, at least from my experience.
Cool. Stay tuned for that. All right. Thanks, Josh. I'll go into my seventh tip. Along the lines of scheduling, schedule something in the middle of your day because your work expands to fill your time. And so it's nice getting the big, like, whether it be you're having a meeting or going to the gym at the start or the end of your day, but sometimes it's good to have a commitment in the middle of the day, maybe lunch with someone, I'm not sure, but it breaks up your day into two really definitive parts. And so instead of moseying about one task the entire day, you are working towards a deadline and there's some sort of time pressure on trying to get something done. And chances are if you start something and you know, like you're midway through it, you'll have that momentum to keep going and wanting to get it done before you leave for whatever commitment you have scheduled. So I found that's really helpful for my days off, having something just in the middle, to hold myself accountable.
Yeah, so there's a few things about this one which are interesting. So I guess on the one hand, there is that time pressure. Yep. You know, everyone relates to that I couldn't do any of my assignment for the 3 weeks before it was due, but then the day of, I just smashed it out. So yeah, it means that not only are you making sure that you use your time wisely, but then you also can recover before that second study block.
Yes.
Okay. Glad we could explain that one.
Okay, Josh, you want to take away tip number 8?
Yeah, this one I think is pretty simple, but it's being strategic with your music choice. And so I'm not just going to give the, you know, oh, don't listen to music with lyrics and only listen to like classical but it's just using your music wisely. So if you're doing something which requires a lot of writing and you're in a good work block, maybe that's a time to use something without lyrics, whether that's classical music or like binaural beats or like brown music. Is that what it's called? Or brown noise? That's it.
Wouldn't know because I don't listen to that.
Okay. Yeah. Real ADHD things. then maybe that's the time for that. But if it's a Saturday morning and you're struggling to find motivation and you don't want to sit down and just listen to nothingness for 3 hours, then maybe that's a good time to just listen to your own music. Something that will give you a little bit of energy, a little bit of joy, and can give you that motivation. Sure, it might not be as productive if you were using, you know, the perfect music. But if that means you study for 3 hours when you otherwise wouldn't, then that's a win. So that is, what is that? Study tip number 8.
I don't listen. I just listen to any music and that's fine for me because once I get into my flow state, I just tune it out.
Mm.
But also that's the best way for me to actually discover music that I like. And music's a really big kind of passion of mine. I recommend NTS Radio for anyone if you want a mixtape and you want to get acquainted with new music. It's so good. Can I just like throw in one of my songs I've been loving now? I was listening to a set called Moin or By Moin.
M-O-I-N.
M-O-I-N. Moin. And it's, yeah, based in London. It was posted on the 15th of the 8th, 2023. And the song Marine Girls, wait, On My Mind by Marine Girls slaps. So.
It's a little anecdote for everyone.
Yes.
Okay. That is strategic music choice. So study tip number 9, last two.
Yes. So my 9th tip is to build your academic vocabulary. this is an interesting tip, but there are certain words that academics use that just elevates your writing. And if you just pay attention to them and note what they use and just plop it in your writing, it just immediately signals to your marker or to whoever's reading your paper that this person knows what's up, you know? So you'll hear things like ultimately, subsequently,
resultantly,
conceptualization, and operationalize. Yes, that's the one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a good one. Like conceptualize mean if you're trying to define something, and that word
operationalize.
Yes, when you're talking about like quantifying something in terms of a methods, like a outcome measure or something like that. So. Yeah, I think those are any good words that you know that are academic.
I mean, you've touched on a lot of them. I think transitional statements are really nice for just like the flow. So I love, you know, if you're trying to reference a supporting article of research going like, indeed, Smith and Jones found blah, 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 blah.
Yes.
I do have a question. How can people build their academic vocabulary?
Yeah, it's not something that I've done very consciously. But I think through reading lots of papers, you pick up on that stuff. But with this tip, I'm sure you'll be more switched on when you're reading and you might pick it up at a faster rate than I did. But I found that it really ties things nicely together. But how did you build yours?
I would say the same. It just came over time. But I actually will play a little bit of devil's advocate here, or at least say that there is a caution to this one, at least I think, which is using those words effectively is brilliant. But if you're throwing in complex terminology for the sake of trying to sound smart and overcomplicating sentences, as a marker, that can be, I don't want to say a red flag, but that's something which is more difficult to read than it is beneficial.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
So build your academic vocabulary, but just make sure that you're using them correctly and appropriately.
Cool. Shall we move on to the last tip, number 10?
Yeah, I think so. Study tip number 10, get a second pair of eyes to go over your assignments as a bit of a circuit breaker.
When you start uni, your grades won't be amazing because there's this really steep learning curve. You're integrating all these new skills, academic writing, referencing, formatting, and it's a huge transition. So you'll get your first assignment back and it'll be often quite confronting because you won't be used to getting those grades, perhaps. And after first year, you'll find that, you know, once you've integrated some of the tutor's feedback, you're starting to do a little bit better, fixing some of those obvious mistakes like referencing and structuring your argument. But then your grades start to plateau.
Oh, no. Jeez.
Yeah, and I was thinking of an analogy, but that's like building muscle or weight loss. You know, you're doing the same things and you've got, what is it, the beginners? You know, when you're weightlifting and...
Beginner gains.
Yes, beginner gains, where you just grow exponentially in such a short period of time.
You're like, I'm going to be massive in 3 years.
And you're like, yeah, this is great. And you keep doing the same things, but then you'll start to plateau because once your body kind of gets used to it or you're...
Yeah, and I was going to say, what do you have to do when your body starts to plateau?
A circuit breaker.
Yeah, you got to shock the body.
Yeah, because you've started to build these systems and patterns of working with your assignments and you've gotten this into this habit. And following that is the path of least resistance. So something like a circuit breaker, something to take you out of your own world and your patterns, so you can start to make more shifts.
And so what I'm hearing a circuit breaker is, in this context, is a second perspective. Something to make you actually think and reflect and go, oh, maybe I could be doing that better. Maybe there's a different way that I could be approaching this.
So there's a number of ways, I guess, you could do this. Josh and I utilized external tutors occasionally in undergrad. So, for example, in my second year going into my third year, I was so frustrated because my lab reports were just not improving. My lit reviews, they were okay, but it was specifically my lab reports. And so I found an external tutor. So they were just a student in the year above me who had done like well on assignments before. And she gave me some really good feedback on one of my assignments, which then I applied going forth to all my assignments, and my grades improved so much. Yeah, your university tutors are, you know, responsible for a really large marking volume and perhaps may not be able to provide you with really, really in-depth feedback necessary needed to develop those skills. Yeah, I think having that external tutor that can maybe focus on you as an individual was really helpful. But I am very mindful that that comes at a cost, and so it's not accessible to everyone. But there are some other things that I also utilized that achieved a similar effect.
Can I just jump in here?
Yeah, of course.
Maybe for those people who don't have the financial capacity at the moment to be able to pay for an external tutor, while they are marking a large volume of assignments, generally, if you'd like further or more specific feedback, you can request it. So you can ask them to either elaborate or go over it in a bit more detail. If you've got a great coordinator, arrange a meeting, something to that effect. But that is something which can be done.
Yes, that is true.
So it's not ideal. And obviously, I still am a big advocate for the external tutors as well. But I think that's a good starting point for some people.
Yeah, I also had another option for students who can't afford it. So utilizing your peers. So I know in honors particularly, it's very competitive. But I think if you have a group of friends and then you both kind of exchange assignments, obviously no plagiarizing or anything like that, someone you can trust, but providing feedback on each other's work, and then once you have that forced break away from your assignment, linking back to one of my earlier tips, and you get your assignment back, you see other people's reflections on it, you can really start to make some good changes. So that's another option. If you can't find any friends that will be willing to do that, even your siblings, parents, anyone you really have access to is very helpful. So for my thesis, I got my mum to read it, I got my sister to read it, and they gave me their opinions and feedback, which is very helpful.
For my final unit of psychology, I got a tutor because I wanted the best chance to get into honours. That was a great decision. That was
good investment.
Literally the highest grade I ever got in a unit. Granted, I was doing it by itself. Used them throughout honours, and they were such an amazing support. We would just have, you know, a bit of a Zoom meeting, discuss where I might be struggling or looking for feedback. They might go over the assignment on their own, leave edits, leave comments, often just suggestions. But they really gave a new way of looking at things, which I think I grew a lot from having that. So that was something I was very fortunate to have.
Yeah.
Would you ever consider looking over assignments?
Actually, I have kind of considered this because I feel like I've gained a lot of knowledge and skills over the 6 years. And yeah, I feel like I have a lot to share. So yeah, I've had some interest, but I haven't really fully committed to anything yet. So, I mean, if you are interested, just for me to gauge, what people want, you can email me at mentalstatuspodcast@gmail.com. But yeah, I'm not entirely sure yet. Alrighty. So I just thought we'll summarize the tips before we ended today's episode. So the first one, I talked about the 1,000-word-per-week rule. Josh then went on to talk about done is better than perfect. The third one was my weird exam revision technique. The fourth one was discovering your own productivity and learning style. The fifth one was using other resources when writing your assignments. Josh came in with that sixth tip about dopamine scheduling, which I loved. The seventh one, we talked about scheduling something in the middle of your day. We then talked about strategic music for the eighth tip. Number nine was building your academic vocabulary. And number 10 was utilizing a second pair of eyes as a circuit breaker.
Not bad.
All right. So I think that's us for today.
Wow. That was maybe a long one.
Yeah. I just didn't know what to say. Well, follow me on Aussie Psych Student on TikTok. I post a lot of videos on there, some behind the scenes stuff. Follow us on Instagram, which I forgot to promote last time. So Mental Status Podcast, we'll link it all in the show notes. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at our mentalstatuspodcast@gmail.com. What else?
If you want to follow me, that's a shame. My favorite joke. Yeah. I love it.
You're going to end every episode with that. But yeah, thank you so much for your support and listening. We really appreciate it, and we'll catch you next time.
All right.
Bye.